Hi, everybody. I'm Jaime Rodriguez, and I'm a Windows 8 evangelist in Microsoft. And I'm going to spend the next 50 minutes or so talking to you about the tools for building Windows Store apps. I'll take a little bit extra step to make sure I help the ones that are here in the room with installing a couple instructions. But my goal for the, you know, for the afternoon is just tell you from the model that you know, which is Xcode and Interface Builder, and tell you about, you know, very similar tools. You know, as Aaron said, it's going to be feel very similar. I'm going to show you some of the concepts that are different and new. And then if you have any questions around top areas that I don't touch, let me know. I can't really do a compare or a comparison feature by feature, but I use Xcode a lot and I use Visual Studio a lot, so I can tell you that we're very, very comparable. All the features that you're familiar with that you might be looking for are there, even though I might not get to show you every single feature in the next 50 minutes or so. So that's kind of where we're at. Before I get into the tools, I do want to kind of give you the must-haves or the prerequisites that you're going to need. And there's only three things that you need to you know, start building Windows Store apps. The first thing is you are going to need to be running Windows 8. We require that for you to be for you to do it. Now, most of you will have a macOS device or a Mac or an Apple device and macOS operating system. You can run it through any virtualization technology. So all of you here got Parallels. You can do VMware. You can do VirtualBox. So, but the most common virtualization technologies all work. If you're not a Parallels person and you want to use VMware, go ahead. It'll work the same, and we've tested all of them and they work. And then for people that don't have Windows 8, we do have an evaluation version we call it a developer evaluation version, which is you can go to our website. The website is dev.windows.com, and I can show you here because some people were asking. So I can come back here to the website. It's dev.windows.com. This is our developer center. So you go here for samples. You go here for a lot of stuff, and we have a straightforward link to downloads. And then from here, you'll get all the downloads that you need, which are going to be, again, just the OS. And if you don't have the OS, for anybody watching the live stream, you can get the developer evaluation version. It's a 90-day free version of full version of Windows 8, and you can use that to develop your app. A lot of people have cranked their app in that, and, you know, we're fine. Like, you know, 90 days is a long time. After that, if you decide to buy it or if you decide you want to continue building apps, then you'll just buy it. And we have a lot of programs where you can get, you know, licenses and stuff like that. So you should be okay there. So you're going to require Windows 8. And again, any virtualization technology will work. Bootcamp works too. So if you don't want to use virtualization technology, you can also use Bootcamp if you want. The next thing that you're going to need is Visual Studio. And from that same website, from dev.windows.com, you will find links to Visual Studio Express. Visual Studio Express is free. It's the equivalent of Xcode with Interface Builder. You're going to see that and Expression. They both come in the same download. It's a free download, so anybody can get it. And it has every feature that you would need to write an app. So you're like, we have different SKUs of Visual Studio. Visual Studio Express is our free one. Then we have some other, like, premium, kind of ultimate and other releases. And those are for architects, and they have really great ALM and a lot more features. But for you to write a really great Windows Store app, Express will be fine. It even supports source control, which is it used to be a differentiator between some of our SKUs. Express has source control, so you'll be able to actually use that from within the Express SKUs and be okay. Obviously, if you're an architect, a tester, a developer, and you want to get the extra features, you can always go purchase a version of Visual Studio, or your company might already have it. And then the last thing that you're going to need in order to get started is you're going to need a developer license. And in our world, we actually separate developer license from store license. Right, so for you all in the room, today you can just go in there, get a Microsoft account, it'll be free, and you can use that for a developer license. And then we'll give you a license for every 30 days. You renew it, it's always free, so you just renew it as you go. And that allows you to create apps, install apps, and test your apps. You can have your friends do the same. Now, when you're ready to submit to the store, that's when you're going to go in there and register to the store as a developer, and that's where, you know, you'll pay $49 to register, just like every other store, or the store, all stores charge a little bit differently. But when you register to the store, that's when you actually register, get validated, and all that stuff. To start developing, you don't need any of that. You just go in there as long as you have a Microsoft account. And Microsoft account is what, you know, we used to call Live ID. So most of you probably already have one. Right, and that's all you're going to need. And then I always throw out there that if you're getting started, there's two resources that I recommend to people. Dev.windows.com is our developer center. And it's got everything, you know, 500 samples of things that you're going to need. Every little task, like, hey, I want to capture camera, I want to use share, I want to use this specific contract. There's little samples of everything that can get you jump started. All the samples come in different languages, so C#, C++, and JavaScript. So whatever your language is, you're going to be able to get a sample for it. And then we also I ship this thing I call Windows 8 Camp in a Box, which is a two-day training, very similar to what you're seeing here. In fact, some of the PowerPoints and some of the sessions overlap. But what that has, which is really cool, is it has a set of hands-on labs that walks you through beginning to end how to build an app, right? So it's a really great way to get jump-started. You get it from on JavaScript and on C#, and it walks you like through eight labs, steps. It walks you through how to build an app from beginning to end. So it's kind of a nice resource where you spend 5 hours, you'll have a really good understanding and kind of guided, tour of developing an app. And I'm about to do the same anyway, so I'm going to give you a little bit of tour of the tools only. And I call these demo do as I said, not as I do. I used to call it doing evil things with Blend. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you the tools, and I'm going to focus on the tasks. So I'm going to show you things like, hey, let's make this button round. And Microsoft people that are watching the stream right now would have a heart attack when they see me do that, because that's something we, from a user experience, we wouldn't want you to do. But I'm going to focus on showing you simple tasks that show you the concepts and how you use the tools so that you can get something out of it on your own. You get a better understanding of how things work. So let's go ahead and get started. So right here I have, this is Visual Studio Express. In fact, let me just close that so you can see me launch it. So this is Express, it's the free version. I actually have both versions here, the Express and the full version of Visual Studio. And let me just show you how kind of we do. So here's our workspace, and this is 100% customizable. So for example, here, right now my toolbox is pinned, I can unpin it, things can be dynamic. I can drag and drop things here, dock it somewhere else if I wanted to dock it here or dock it to the bottom. I'll leave it there because that's kind of where I like it. But this is very customized, so very much like what you do in Xcode, where you set up your window in and then it saves it for you and you don't mess with it, right? You spend a good 45 minutes setting up once and then you use it for the next 6 months. So that's kind of where we start. This is our workspace, and you're going to see me look at stuff here as we go. So I'm going to say new project, and I'm going to pick a Windows Store project. And you see here all the languages that we've talked about are there. And in this case, I'm going to give you a project that comes from a template so that you can see some of the UI default functionality. So I'm just going to say start with a grid app, and I'll click on it right there. And that way you see a project that has a little bit of functionality. And we'll leave the default name app6. And so now we can see that, the template generated a lot of code, like every other IDE does. Gives you kind of a framework to start from. And here we have our Solution Explorer, which is kind of very similar to the Project Explorer. Here I can explore any projects. In this case, it creates one executable. But if I want to partition my application into multiple libraries and one executable so I can reuse code and keep things clean, I can do that. So I'm just come here and I said add new project, and I can add a class library. Normally I would have one executable with multiple libraries. From here you can see also referencing other libraries, like third-party libraries. If I wanted to add a reference to say Bing Maps or Callisto Control, some of the stuff that you've heard about today, I can just right-click and say I could just go back and add a reference here. You'll see right now I'm just referencing the default libraries. So very similar to your Project Explorer, very similar functionality that you're going to be able to navigate through. Right here underneath, you see a properties window. You're going to see me use that a lot more when I get to UI. If you saw that with my template, we kind of like, I did file new project, and I didn't enter a lot of settings specific to the apps, like normally where you would go in there and configure your application name and all that stuff. What we do here is when we created your project, we give you a manifest. So I can come back here. And click on the package manifest. Somehow my mouse is not working very good. I had a black shiny surface here. Give me 1 second. Let me see if I can get this. Because somehow my mouse. 1 second. Let me see if that's exact same empty project, so that looks a little better. I'm going to use this mouse pad here. hopefully I'll do it. So you can see here, we have this manifest file, which is just an XML file. You can actually right here, right click on it and say edit with XML, and you see it as an XML file, but we have XML, a manifest editor where I can come here and enter all the capabilities, all the stuff that I need to configure my app. So for example, I can say, hey, I'm going to support these orientations. Here's my application name. Here's all the logos and all the stuff that I need to have my application have a live tile and everything else. So this is kind of where you will configure your app such that you can submit it to the store, right? And you'll learn a lot about some of these dialogues as we go throughout the day today. Another thing that you see right here is I have this right here that's telling me, hey, right now this application is targeting the scheme for this application, which we call a configuration, is targeting any CPU on debug. So I can come back here to my project and actually just look at properties, or I can come back here onto build and look at configuration manager and choose any kind of scheme. So right now I'm saying, hey, I'm using any CPU. That's great for HTML and SAML C-sharp apps or apps that are C-sharp or Visual Basic, because any CPU will work. So you compile once for ARM and x86. If you're actually creating a C++ project or referencing a C++ project, then you do have to pick a platform. And you can see here you get x86, x64, or ARM. Right, and our tools run only on x86 and, or you know, of course, the x64 too. So, if for example, here I was debugging or trying to build my application and test it on ARM, what I would do here is I can actually choose ARM and compile for ARM. But then when I go here into the debug environment right here, this dropdown, I can actually say, hey, debug this in a remote machine. And we have tools. With the tools, you can install on your Surface device, on your Windows RT device. You just install a remote debugger, and then you literally, from within this tool, deploy onto the ARM device and debug and do everything you need. The app is running on your ARM. You're debugging just the way you would if it was local, and then you're testing on that ARM device, because our tools don't run on ARM. Right, so that's very easy for you to actually do that and show that. It's very seamless with regards to, like, you still get a full-fledged debug experience. It's very efficient. Another option that we have here for debugging is that, I can have a simulator. So, for example, right here with this project, default project as we have it, let me go ahead and show you here. I can choose the simulator, and I'll go back and say, target x86 debug. And I can just start it, and that will show you the simulator. Did I not select it? My mouse is just... I can do touch, but somehow the mouse is getting stuck. Is there somebody else? All right, let's try it like that, but we'll see. So I select simulator right here. Hopefully I'll stick. So you can see it right here on the simulator. Now, before I get into the debugging in the simulator, let me show you a couple of things that are really interesting in the simulator. First of all, you'll see it right here. The simulator has my start screen. If I actually exit from here, if I go back into desktop, you see that the simulator is actually my exact same start screen, all the exact same apps and everything else that that you see right here running on my full version of Windows. Are right here on the simulator, right? So the way it works for us is the simulator is actually creating a new session for Windows, remote desktoping into my machine, and running my full version of Windows. So for example, I'm in the simulator, and I was debugging this application called App 7. But for example, I can launch the Bing Map apps. Again, my mouse is stuck. It's funny, I can touch, but I can't do a lot with mouse, and I'm going to really need this for... as we go. So for example, here I can run these Bing Map apps. So I can run any application within the simulator because it's a full version of Windows. And one of the things that I can do with the simulator right here is simulating touch. So let me go ahead and make this a little bit bigger. And for example, right here, if you have the hardware, so you're going to be running, you'll have the simulator, which will run fine on your virtualization hardware. And for example, I can go in and emulate touch. So I can click right here and emulate touch, and you saw me launch these applications, so I can just come back here, and you see here, it's behaving as if I had touch. So I can come back here and just swap, right? If I do the swipe here between the two apps, you see, just as if I had touch, I can even go down and simulate multi-touch. So for example, right here, if you don't have multi-touch, this is our start screen, and Aaron earlier showed you the semantic zoom, so I can come back here and just say, hey, give me the pinch zoom mode, right? And let me just separate it here. right? And then let me just press these, and you'll see here, like I'm actually doing a zoom effect as if it was a two-pinch mode. And you see here, I'm going into semantic zoom, all within the simulator. So if you don't have Windows hardware, if you don't have multi-touch hardware, you can still test for all these great features and make sure that you build them a really immersive app. So that's kind of, you know, a little bit of what you get with touch. Going back to debugging our app, which we had, I'd see, I'll go back right here and turn back into the app. And you'll see a few more things that the simulator will let you do. For example, right now the app is, you know, right there is laid out in a kind of a 1366 by 768 layout. Somebody asked earlier, well, how do I test all the resolutions? Right here from the simulator, I can go back here and say, hey, what does this app look at in a 27-inch monitor with 2540 by 1400. And you see that within the simulator, everything changed, and now I have the new layout. My app is actually behaving as if I was running in that model. So you don't have to go test every single, you know, buy every single form factor out there, every single display out there from the simulator. You definitely get a really great idea of, hey, what does it look like in that bigger world? What does it look like on the smaller world? Another thing that I can do, if I go back to something a little more readable, right, I'll go back to 1366. Another thing that I can do is orientation, right? So I can rotate. And all of the layout events, all of the native events that are happening on the operating system to make the rotation and everything else happen are right there on the simulator again, right? So you have, you don't need to go out and buy a lot of hardware. It would be great for you to try it on real hardware. And by the way, if you do want to try it on real hardware, Windows or Microsoft has this thing we call Windows Application Labs. So you can walk here into a specific lab in Silicon Valley. We have them pretty much all the time. And you walk into a lab and you say, hey, I want to test my app. And there's a room in there with hardware, very much like we do on the hardware, where we have five or six different devices. And you can just spend a little bit of time testing your devices on real hardware. So we have something available for you to test on a myriad of devices. But in the meantime, while you're doing the development, you don't want to go to the lab. You can definitely use the simulator and get you very, very far along without having to have touch hardware or, you know, large displays or anything like that. We came here because I wanted to show you some of the debugging capabilities. So let's just go back here. I have the exact same app. You see the source code over here. I can go in there and put a breakpoint in something like item detail page. And I'm just going to zoom in a little bit. And I'll just put a breakpoint there. I'll go back here. So I'm interacting where I'll just click on it right here. Or I'll tap on it because my mouse, what's going on? Let me plug in this other mouse, see if I get better luck. Somebody brought me a different mouse. Yeah, but just somehow, this is interesting. Somehow my mouse is just not working. I see it, but I click and nothing's happening. Let me stop debugging it and try it again. It's a what? No, it's just the mouse. Like literally the events are not firing through. I'm going back to the... All right, so let me try outside of the simulator. That should have worked, but just to be safe, let me try here local machine. Put the breakpoint, you see it hit there. We'll go back to why the simulator didn't do it. But, you know, from a debugging standpoint, you have, you know, best of breed tools, everything that you would expect. Like, you have your locals window right here. It has all my locals window. You have watch windows. I have a breakpoint there. If you want to set conditions for the breakpoint, if you want to set a hit count where you said, hey, skip it, you know, skip the breakpoint from hitting, you know, the first three or five times. You can come back here and say, break always or skip a few numbers. You know, you can have very complex logic on when the breakpoints are hit, when a data change or anything like that. Everything that you would expect from a really great debugging tool, you're going to get. I can go back here into my watch window and, for example, write expressions. For example, I can say, I can just drag a variable and see the value of the variable, or I can say, evaluate an expression like page state equals null. And you'll see that evaluates the true because it is null. So everything that you expect with regards to debugging tools, you're going to have it. I see my call stack right here, threads, everything that you would expect is there. Again, we're very, very comparable. I don't think you're going to miss anything out. So that's kind of a high-level default object model, a default project that you would get without having to do something from scratch. I'm going to move on to give you a, hey, let's go wire up something from scratch so you see how we connect all the UI. So I'm just going to start with a blank app, brand new blank app. And I'll get this one into how we connect UI and how things work within our model. So the first thing is I said, give me a blank app. And you see that we have a main page. We always have one view or one page that we use that we have as your default that's getting launched. And my designer is coming up. So let me go ahead and zoom out here. Make them a little bit smaller. And so you can see both the designer and a little bit of the SAML. So if in Xcode, you're actually working in what used to be Interface Builder in the new integrated Interface Builder, and you're actually just dragging and dropping things, and that's editing some, that's adding stuff to the SIB, which is actually an XML file. We do the exact same thing, right? So here, I have a designer surface, and I have my XML file, and the language is called SAML for us, and it's a very rich language. And one of the things that's slightly different is that we tend to get more onto the SAML. We tend to edit things by hand a lot. At least I tend to do it. A lot of developers tend to do it. It just makes us more efficient. We're much more in control. And in our case, the SAML is designed, the serializations and all those things are designed such that you can do this kind of work. So we're very good at serializing and letting you tweak things up and not having things go corrupt all the time. When I'm in Xcode, I tend to be a little bit more afraid of if I tweak it and it messes up, I won't know how to fix it. On SAML, we tend to be much more involved, much more hands-on. But I can do all the tasks without ever getting into the SAML too. So for example, right here, I have my default window, and you see I have a grid. So I'm just going to select the grid here. And for example, I can drag right here. I'm just going to drag something. And right there, I just added a line, and that added a row definition onto that grid. So remember, earlier we talked about our layout being very dynamic. So for example, I'm going to create an application right here, and that added a row definition and say, look, you took about one-third of the space. I can do anything I want here. Like for example, I can say, I want that row to be 100 pixels, right? And I edited it manually, and that actually changed. You see the UI changed a little bit, and now it's 100 pixels. And once I drag around and I told it, hey, I want you to be fixed size, even if I drag on the UI, this still remembers that it's fixed size and it's not taking any more space or is not going back to a percentage. The other one is taking the rest of the space available. So let's split this into, like, say, half right there with maybe a 330. And that's going to be our basic UI. And, of course, every demo with Aaron, I always have to do, when we do our first demo, it's always a random number generator. Random number generator. So let's start there. And I'll show you adding a few more assets and a little bit more visuals in here. So I'm going to go right here. You see here, here's our toolbox, and here's where all of our controls are. So for example, right here, I can go back into the grid, and you see a lot of our controls, our common SAML controls, everything that you would expect, like, combo box, button, checkbox, all the common controls that you would expect are going to be here, right? So I can go back here, and I'll just drag a button that we're going to use from our UI here, and I'm just going to drag, oops. So I'll select the grid. And I'll add a button right there. And you see by default, I had a pretty small button. I can make it a little bit bigger. I can come back here into this. We call it the properties window. It's an inspector, right? So I can come back here into this inspector and, for example, say, let's replace the background brush. And you see here I have a color editor. And let's just make it red so you can see that there was a change there. I can start customizing the properties one at a time the way you normally would. Again, exact same thing that you're familiar with, what you would expect from any IDE. Right, so I have a button there, and in a minute, I can double-click, and I can just double-click the button right here and add an event. Oops. Again, I'm having mouse problems, but if I tap it, somehow my mouse is like an alt keys press. But I can do it, so I normally just double-click here. Another way that I can do it is I can just come back here and see the events for that button. Right? If I select the button right here, I can just see the events for that button. And here I just enter or I double click on it. Again, the mouse is, and then that will generate the right event for you. So we do a lot of automatically code generating with regards to handling events. So you can see here I added the event. So now I have a click event for that button, and we're going to come back to that button in a minute. I want that button to do something a little bit more than just generate a random number. I wanted to give you some UI so I could show you how to interact with UI. So I'm going to go right here to my project, and I'm going to add some assets. So first thing I'm going to do is I just add new folder. And this is my project, and I can add any assets I want. There's definitely something wrong. Give me 1 second, because I'm definitely getting some sort of interference. Because even my keyword is not working. It's a what? There's a what? It's a what? Sorry? Well, but the keyboard is, I can't do it all with touch and keyboard. It'll take us too long. So let's just go here. Yeah, like my whole keyboard is messed up. I see this cable dangling here. That's what I'm, give me 1 second. Let me see if I can fix this. It's like something's stuck on my keyboard. I'm not sure why. Give me 1 second. Let me try these just to... making sure there's not a key that's stuck or something, but... Maybe I'm back. So somehow I left the key in touch. So somehow... So there, I added a folder, and hopefully we're back on track. Let's... fingers crossed, we're back on track. So I created a new folder because I'm going to bring some assets. And I took pictures. I was thinking about this demo on Sunday when we were looking at the schedule. So I'll go back here and add existing items. I had pictures of the speakers because we were putting them for the website. And so I just went back. And let's just go ahead and add everybody here. So this is how you add assets onto the solution, right? So I'm just going to go back there and automatically add all the assets. And it's bringing them all in. And so we have a little bit of functionality there. Now, in order for you to not see me and in order to show you snippets, we can do snippets by dragging and dropping stuff from within snippets here, like I have some custom snippets here, or you can customize it at the system level. So in this case, I'm adding this extra class called speaker and an event class, which has a list of speakers that we're going to use for a random number generator. So there's no magic here. You're going to hear Aaron talk about C#, and he'll show you a little bit of the collections and everything that you'll see here. So there's no magic, very straightforward, just declaring a few speakers. And now I can go back here to my button click event handler, where we had some of the random number generated stuff that we added. And I'll walk you through what we're doing. So pretty much all I'm doing is I have this random number generator, and it's going to go back and say, create a random number, and then go into the speakers, and then populate an image and a text, and give it the image of the speaker or the picture of the speaker and the name of the speaker. Right, and we haven't done that UI, so we're going to go in there and do a little bit of, hey, let's go back into UI and add the speaker image and the text. So we can go back here to our UI. We have the button already wired. I'm going to put it right here on the top, so I'll just go back here and manually, so I can show you a little bit of manual if you want. I can just add another grid, and you can see here, so if I select right here, this grid is living inside the other one. And I can go back here and, for example, let's just make the grid width equals 300, height equals 300. And you can see there it's centered because by default, when you put something in a grid, by default, it automatically centers. I can go back and say align it somewhere else, or I can just, again, I added it manually, but I can just, drag it around and my margins are actually shifted and everything else there. So again, you see how we go back and forth a lot more. We've been manual editing and using the designer. Whatever makes you more effective, you can use either one. So now onto the grid, I can select the grid right there, and I'll just add an image. And you see here by default, like this time I'm going to use the inspector or the property editor here. So I'm just going to go back here and say, let's tweak the layout. By default, it said that the layout was going to be 100 pixels, so I can just click there and make it auto. And then I can go back here with layout. And remember, we talk about dynamic layouts. I can tell it, hey, just stretch it out. So take it as much as you can on the layout. So right now, whatever the size of the grid containing is, that's what we're going to actually use. And if you remember, we have an event handler over there, and it's looking for this variable called pic, right? PIC, because we want to connect that to the UI. So the way I connect from my UI down to the, you know, to the code, to my view, is I can just come back here and I say xname equals pick, right? And that automatically builds the connection between, you know, the code behind, or what we call the code behind, which would be a controller for you, and the actual, you know, the actual view that we have here. So that automatically will do the magic there. And then I can come back here and just say add a text blocks. And this one, we were going to call it name. So, and I picked that name so that I could show you that X name can actually be name. And then I can do certain things, like, for example, this, I want it to be horizontal alignment equals to stretch. Actually, we're going to do horizontal alignment equals center so that we can center the name. And let's do vertical alignment equals bottom. And you can see IntelliSense is coming up as I, you know, go in there and edit my SAML. Again, I can do all of these through the inspector or through the property window, but that'll take me a little bit longer. And then, so we have name, horizontal alignment, bottom. And let's just give it a height, because we're aligning to the bottom. We don't want to take it too much space, so I'm just going to say height is 50. And right there, we have it. So we have our UI. Now, obviously, right now, I can't actually test, you know, whether that's right. So why don't we just text right here? Just for testing purposes, I'll just say text equals Aaron. We'll use a picture of Aaron. So you see the text right there. Something you see is that the text is actually too small, so I probably need to go back and change the font size. I can do it manually by just typing font size, or I can come back here and pick a larger, a bigger font size. So let's just go with, that 36 is probably pretty good. And then I can go back here into the image, and just to test and make sure that things are working, I can just say source equals, and we added the images and their speakers. So I'll just say speakers, Aaron, and it's a JPEG. And you see his image. So design time, everything's changing. Now we have all this stuff wired up. I can run it. Oops, let's go back here. I made a mistake, so let's go see. Oh, when I drag and drop the code, you see that I drag and drop some code that interacted in the event handler, interacted with the image, and right now the code is actually telling me, hey, this image hasn't been, like, I don't know how to resolve this type. You know, an Xcode is the equivalent of, hey, I don't have the right include file, right? So you can see here, it's already underlined, so as I go, as I start typing my code, the editor is actually, you know, compiling behind the scenes and telling you all the errors, telling you the things that it cannot resolve. And I, right here, I can just go over here and say, you know, resolve, and it automatically says, so you want to just resolve it or add a using, which is the equivalent of the include statement. And in this case, I'll just tell it to add the using, and then I'll go back there. And now I should be able to run it. And let's just run it in local machine so we see it in full. So, and you see my button there, and we added the event handler. So you see when I click on it, random number, comes back, and you see all the speakers and all the code. So that's how we connect UI, right? Very similar to where you used to. I think you'll be, you know, you won't see any surprises. You won't see anything that you're not expecting there. Debugging still works and everything else. So that's kind of the default. And in Visual Studio, we would do a lot of the code editing. We would do a lot of the debugging, the breakpoints, and stuff like that. But if I wanted to take this a little bit farther with regards to Visual Polish, the design tools a little bit more, I would go into Blend, and I would just say, I take this exact same project and just say opening Blend, right? And this is opening a new tool, just like in the old Xcode where Xcode and Interface Builder were two separate. That's how we do it in our world. The tools are, you know, separate because you have a lot of the functionality shared, so it's the same editor, the same team writing both tools, but we have them separate because the look and feel is significantly different. So you see here, I opened the exact same project, I got the exact same code, and everything's still there. So I can go back here into my main page SAML and edit with the same stuff that I was working on. And what I'm going to show here is a little bit of the templating stuff, templating functionality that we have in Blend. So I'm going to go here. For starters, let me go ahead and add a new control, a grid view. You've seen that a lot of our collections, we use grid view and list view a lot. So I can just right here, just type grid and find grid view, right? And I have a grid view right here, and I'm just going to go and add it onto here to the bottom of our screen. So we just have you know, one big grid view. And here I can go back and edit the properties in the grid view. Such that it takes, you know, for example, right now it's in row one. Oops. Right now it's in the second row, so you can see here, if I go into some of the properties I can edit, For the grid view, you see here, it's got a width and a height. I just want it to be auto again because of dynamic screens. Oops. So I'm just going to go back and turn them both to auto. And then I'm just going to say, you know, stretch it. So, you know, stretch it so that it takes all the width and stretch it so that it takes all the height. And you see right now it's on row one. I can change that to be row zero and it moves, but we do want it on row one. So just leave it like that. And you see that there's a margin. I can get rid of that margin if I wanted to, or I can make it 50 so that it looks a little bit better. And 20 margins from the top, 20 units from the top. So now I have a grid view. And what I want to show you is how we do templating, right? So I'm going to data bind these through how a designer would data bind all of these without writing any code. So I'm in the grid view here, and I can right-click on it. First of all, I'm going to give it a name so I don't forget. So I can say, you know, remember how we did X name? I can do a name right here. I can just say rename, or I can come back here and enter a name. So I'll just call it speaker grid. And my keyboard misbehave again. I have caps, so somehow there's some interference here that I'm seeing. But hopefully you'll be able to get through. So I call this speaker grid, and we'll be okay. And then inside the speaker grid now, you see right there the name change. I can go in there and say edit a template, and I'm going to edit the item template that gets generated. So I'm just going to go here and say, hey, I'm going to edit the item templates for our speakers. And I'm going to say create an empty template. Rather than says data template one, sure, we'll use a default name. And here I can edit a data template for everything that I would want the speaker to look like. But we've already done that because we know what a speaker looked like when we tested the random number button, right? So I can go back here and again, just mix and match. And I can go back here, look at my SAML within Blend so I can show you that I can edit SAML manually. And I can say, hey, you know, I have this grid and this is what it looks like. And, you know, I'll just go back here. And I'll just copy and paste, and I'll go back and add it onto the data template, right? So now, this is what our data template for a speaker is going to look like. And you see here we have grid. We still want it to be 300. Now, we don't longer need the margin because we're going to be inside a list box, so I can just take all of that out. We're going to be inside the grid view. And so we're going to go back here and have it be inside the grid view here, inside the data template, right? And then... I don't longer need the X names because this is going to be data bound, so I can get rid of that. And I actually don't want it to be hard coded to be a source error because I'm going to show you data binding. Now I could do this in code. If you prefer not to use data binding, you can do all of this in code. But on the Windows world, in the SAML world, we tend to use data binding a lot. So I'm going to go back here, and then just going to say image source binding, and the property that I want to bind to is pick. So I have it right there. And I'm going to do the same for the text blocks. So I'm just going to say binding name, right? And I can get rid of all the extra stuff that I would have here if I had anything else. So everything else is fine. I don't have any extra layout stuff that I can do. So we have a grid view, and it has a data template now. And I'm inside Blend, so this is kind of the designer role, but I'm going to show you that I can run the project from here, and I've got to connect the data, right? So I'll just go and just to be safe, I'm going to build, make sure that I didn't make any major mistakes, with the keyboard. And then I can go back here, and from within the designer tool, I can still edit the code. So from this is my designer tool, but I can still come back here, and I'm just going to say this does, what do we call it, speaker grid? Dot item source equals event dot speakers. And you see IntelliSense works within Blend. So this is our designer tool, but you can still do a little bit of manual or text editing and code editing. I still recommend Visual Studio for that, but you can do that. Now, the one thing that Blend cannot do that's different is that Blend does not have a debugger. So if you want to debug, I can run the project. So I'll show you right here. And I say project, run project. And you see here all of our new UI. So first of all, check that out. We wrote no code at all, and I have that data-bound list view, right? So, and this is functional, like, you know, Aaron was showing you earlier, selection and all this stuff. This is functional. It's a data-bound list view without me writing a single line of code. All I did is I took data, created a template, and put it together, right? Very, very straightforward for us, for you to design some of these. Our button still works, you know, nothing changed. So you see all of that functionality. I'm running the application, so from within Blend, I can run But I cannot set debug, so breakpoints. So if I wanted to set breakpoints, I would go back into Visual Studio. And we're going to do that a little bit later, so hang on. Let me show you a couple more things that you can do in Blend so you get an idea of the power that we have within Blend. So I'm going to go right here and just exit out of that. Oops. So Blend is really great for data templating. That's what I just showed you. Another thing that we can do, somebody earlier asked about themes. Another thing that we can do, which is really cool with Blend, is we can actually do what we call control templating and building styles. So for example, right here, our UI is right here. We have our, somehow my UI, let me zoom out so I can see where, oh, I'm in the data template editor, that's why. Our UI is still here. So you can see back here, I have my button and everything else. So let me show you what I could do with buttons with control templates. On the SAML world, we have this separation between the view of a control of any widget. So we have a separation between the behavior and the view, right? So what it looks like is totally different from what it does. For example, a button will always be a button, will always have a click behavior, but it doesn't have to look like this. A button can come right here. And for example, I can add another button right here. And I can say, hey, I'm going to edit the control template, so the view for this button right here. And I can just go back here, right-click on it, and say edit template. And I'm just going to say edit a copy of the current one so you see what it's built like before. And it's going to generate this reusable style called button style one. That way I can reuse it in as many buttons as I want to. I can set it to be my default look for any button, right? But for now, we're going to do something ugly, so I'm going to leave it like that, and I'm not going to reuse it much. But now you can see here, inside the template editor, you can see what a button looks like in Windows. A button looks like this. We have this thing called Content Presenter. This is the control that does all the magic for data binding and takes all kinds of different content. That's why we call it a Content Presenter. And around it, there's a border. And that's what's defining the look and feel. So all we have right here is a border with a Content Presenter. So I can do something like, for example, move the Content Presenter to the top and blow away the border. Right? And now I have a button that doesn't have a look and feel. Right? It's still got a Content Presenter. It's still going to render the text if I want to. But what I wanted to do was maybe show you like a round button. And again, user experience, no round buttons, please. But if I'm just going to show you the concept, let's try it. So I'm inside here, inside my grid. And I can come back here and say, add an ellipse. Right? And I'll just go back into my grid. Click on the ellipse, and it added an ellipse. Now, a couple things you'll notice. First of all, the ellipse right now is 100 by 100. That's the default. So I can go back there and just say, set it to auto, right, so that it automatically resizes as we go. And you see that, hey, that became size 0 because the alignment was wrong. But I can go in there and say stretch it, and now it's right. Now, another thing you'll notice is that by default, it picks this brush, right? So right now, my buttons would all be white, and that's kind of bad. So let's do two things. The first thing is I'm going to move my ellipse so it's behind the Content Presenter there, right? And then I can go back here onto the fill. Now, ellipse has a fill property. Button does not have a fill property. Button has a background, right? But I can go back and say, look, man, do a template binding between my button and my ellipse. So I can right here go in there and do a template binding between the button and the ellipse and say, hey, bind the fill property in the ellipse to the background in my button. And now it became transparent because that's the default background for button. Later on, we can go in there and change the button, and that's a dynamic thing where we will change it as we go, and we'll always have a custom thing. So very reusable styles, right? And this is how we, without writing any code, we just redefine our button to be a round button, right? So again, these are the kind of things that you will do in Blend. The control template, the data template are things that you will do in Blend. One more thing that you will always do in Blend are your animations. So from within our system, we have two types of animations. First of all, we have a lot of animations that come with Windows. We call them transitions and animations, like the pop-up and the slides and all of things that are what we call the Windows personality are there and are available to you. They're already pre-built. So you just have to reference and say, hey, this content is going to slide in. This content is going to slide out. All of that is pre-built. But if you want to build your own custom animation, something fancier, crazier, whatever, something that differentiates you, you can do that too. So let me go ahead and get out of here on the template editor, for example, and let's just pick this image right here. Let's see, we have button grid. So let's pick this image right here of the speaker that we had, and let's animate him a little bit. So we can go back here and just create a brand new animation. Let's just call it Storyboard 1. And then just go back there. And you see here, we're in our timeline. Now I can actually, there's different modes. I'm not gonna resize all my dialog here, but you see we're in a timeline. All our animations are time-based. And you can see here, I have the button selected and it's recording. So anything that I do right now is gonna turn into an animation. So I can go back here and say, look, at 500 milliseconds, why don't we, what should we do? Let's rotate him, right? So why don't we just rotate this picture by, you know, minus 45, right? And then we're going to say, look, at 1 second, rotate him back all the other way. So do it a little bit faster, right? And we're not going to go all the way to 45. Let's go there. I can even come down here to, for example, any of the keyframes that I'm adding and select the easing function, right? So for example, I'm just going to say, look, let's do, right now there's no easing function, so it's kind of a linear animation, but I'm just going to say, hey, do a back out. Right, and it's actually, you know, there it has an easing function and everything's there and everything's working, right? So you see right there, it's recorded. I can play it back here if you want to see it. So that's kind of what it's going to look. It's kind of going to go a little bit like that and then whoop, jump. So that's kind of where we're at, and I'm not going to worry about making it pretty, but that gives you some of the functionality that you'll have within Blend. So the very last thing I'm going to get out of recording right here. And so the very last thing that I have to do is, you know, go back and add a little bit of code to actually, you know, do these, do all of this stuff together and to kind of run that animation. So I can click on this button right here. From within Blend right here, I can do the exact same thing where I add the event handler. I can, you know, go back here, look at the event, and just say click and add the event handler there. And this one's going to be, let's go here, and I want to do storyboard. SB equals, and this is what's going on behind the scenes so you understand it. As we're building all this UI, the storyboards and the styles and everything go in this thing called the resources collection, right, which are the styles that we're going to use for this page. And you have a resources collection at the app level and at the page level. So I'm just going to say reference to a resource that I created. So I'm just going to say these resources, and I'm pretty sure I didn't change the name, so it should be storyboard one, right? And I just have to cast it to a storyboard because resources can have anything, so I have to go back and tell them what I want out of it, right? And then I'm just going to say sv.begin, which will run our animation as we had it. So whenever that round button gets clicked, this is going to run, right? And then the last thing that we have to do here is I added a storyboard, and very much like earlier where we added the bitmap image and we didn't have a reference, I have to go back here and add a reference. So I'll go back to the top and add a using. And I'm pretty sure that's windowsui.saml.media.animation. Fingers crossed on that one, because I'm guessing that one. And then just say build. And it's building. So let's run our project. So let's see what we created. So I just go back and say build, run. And we still have our button, all button. We still have our list view with selection. And now we have this round button. And we added a click. And when I click on it, the animation happens, right? So all of that functionality we added is there. It's all functional. We created a totally different look and feel. Now, this look and feel is in a style, so I can reuse it. So earlier when we talked about themes and how easy it is to create your own theme, you can go back, create a style out of it, and any button that I add can have that exact same theme, right? Again, don't do round buttons. That was just the simplest demo I could think of, right? So that's where we're at. That's what you use Expression Blend for, you know, in our world. And you've seen a little bit of the strengths on both. Right now, I got to go back. So we did all this work in Blend. So what's happening behind in Visual Studio with my project, right? Because that's important. And you see when I come back to Visual Studio, it says, hey, these files have been edited. So it automatically detects that the files have been edited. Everything's in sync because we were working on the exact same file. So just say, hey, do you want to just reload all the projects? And I'm going to say, yes, of course, right? And I'll go back and add the same breakpoint that we didn't get to work earlier. And I'm going to, just because I like to punish myself, I'm going to try to go back and make that simulator work because I got to show you a breakpoint in the simulator. I'm not going to sleep if I don't. So let's try it one more time now that my mouse seems to be behaving a little better. So I'm just going to take the exact same app. Now I'm running it inside the simulator with debug breakpoint. And you guys got to cross your fingers for me. Right, so I can come back here and click on the breakpoint, click on the button, my breakpoint works, so that was a mouse problem. Sorry about that. Press F5 and the thing runs. Let's just remove the breakpoint so you can see everything work. And that's where we're at. So those are our two tools. Again, I use Xcode a bit. I'm not an expert. I'm a little bit better at Visual Studio. But from a functionality standpoint, everything that you expect from Xcode, you're going to find in Visual Studio and Blend. You know, all the functionality should be there. All the functionality that you need to build some really great apps is going to be available to you. In fact, there's a lot of new functionality that, as you saw, you can take advantage and make some really compelling UI without writing a lot of code. So our tools are very friendly to designers. And this is kind of how we think. We think when you write an app, you're going to have some design tasks and some coding tasks, right? And we're going to have you know, some tasks that Blend is really optimized for, like all of the templating and styling. I didn't show you path editing. You can actually go in there and edit paths and transitions and all the functionality that's very more designer-centric. And then we will have these core authoring tasks that you can do everywhere, like layout and basic property editing. And then there's certain things that Visual Studio will be better for, like refactoring or profiling your tools, you know, your profiling tools, code analysis. All those things will happen in Visual Studio. But the tools will go back and forth. You're working in one same source file, so you'll be fine with regards to working. And that's it. That's for the recap for my tools. Anybody that needs to install them here, we have a break coming up, so I can help you get making sure that you're getting started with your Parallels and installing Windows. And then the recap for everybody else is the tools are free. There's no reason not to get started. You can actually go in there and get started for free immediately, right? And then we do have great tools, so everything that you would expect is going to be there. You're going to be very effective at building apps very quickly. That's it. Thank you very much. Oh, I'm 5 minutes over. So here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do for the next 15, or actually the next hour or so. First of all, lunch is on the hallway. And then we have a panel of people that have built apps before. So we're bringing in, so go out, get your lunch. If you need to go out and stretch your leg, this is your biggest break, so feel free to take a break. If you smoke or anything, feel free to take it, you know, stretch your legs a little bit. But anybody that wants to come back, we have a panel with questions, people that have taken the dive, people that have apps in the stores, you can ask them how they're doing, what they think of the platform and all this stuff. So we'll probably start in around 12 to 15 minutes with the panel. And then at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we begin back with Aaron. And for those of you that were here in the morning, here's just my setting expectations. The first two sessions, high level, Todd, a lot of PowerPoint. We, from here down, we dive onto code. As you saw me get on the tools, from here down, you're going to get into the differences and a little bit more into the code. So, you know, stick around and you'll get fun. All right, thank you very much.